Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Chris Ryan. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we welcome Dr. Claire Harrison, who discussed management strategies for anemia in patients with myelofibrosis and the implications of the Phase 3 independence trial presented at the 2026 EHA Congress. Dr. Harrison is a professor of myeloproliferative neoplasms and clinical director of Guy's and St. Thomas's NHS Foundation Trust in London, United Kingdom. In the exclusive interview, Dr. Harrison detailed the prevalence and current challenges in managing myelofibrosis-associated anemia. She also detailed key efficacy outcomes reported for luspatercept in the independent study, along with outlining some of the factors that contributed to the study narrowly missing statistical significance for its primary endpoint of red blood cell transfusion independence for at least 12 consecutive weeks during the first 24 weeks of treatment. Thank you again, Dr. Harrison, for joining us today to discuss some of the ongoing research within the myelofibrosis space and the management of anemia, and specifically the outcomes from the Phase 3 independence trial that were presented back at EHA a few weeks ago. So just to get us started in general, just for patients with myelofibrosis, you know, what is the prevalence of anemia and some of the current challenges with managing anemia for this population?
Good to have a chat to you again today. Thanks so much. Anemia is actually one of the key features of myelofibrosis and actually a diagnostic criterion. It's also very strongly linked to prognosis, and increasing severity of anemia is linked to reduced life expectancy. So anemia is prevalent. 25% also of patients will be anemic at least at diagnosis, but it also is something that is progressive. Also, it's important to say that anemia is multifactorial and can also be linked to the therapies that we use to treat the disease. So many patients with myelofibrosis, in fact, I would say most of them, receive a JAK inhibitor, and most JAK inhibitors are linked to anemia as an adverse effect.
Thank you for that overview to get us started. And just looking at luspatercept in general, I know we've seen phase 2 data for this agent before, and you know, within the United States, it's currently within the NCCN guidelines for anemia management and myelofibrosis. So, you know, what has been the role of this agent in terms of the management of anemia for patients with myelofibrosis?
We've seen, as you said, the positive results of the phase 2 study ACE-536, which was published by Aaron Gerds relatively recently. And it was interesting, when we did that study, we looked at patients on and off JAK inhibitors, those who were transfusion dependent and those that were just anemic but not transfusion dependent. And we saw meaningful improvements. And that was the basis, really, for the independent study. And I'm aware that luspatercept is used by colleagues in other countries, specifically North America, to treat anemia. But it's always good to know what is the evidence behind that. And so that was the premise, really, for the independent study.
We saw about a year ago that the study narrowly missed its primary endpoint, but now looking fully at the efficacy data that were presented at EHA, you know, what were some of the key outcomes reported from that presentation?
Let's just remember what population of patients we were looking at in the independent study. So first of all, we were looking at patients who were receiving at least 4 up to 12 units of red cells in the 12 weeks leading up to the study. So that's pretty heavily transfusion requiring. And they were on a JAK inhibitor for at least 32 weeks and on a stable dose for 16 weeks. These patients were quite heavily transfusion dependent, and they were randomized in a placebo-controlled manner to receive luspatercept, which could be dose incremented or placebo. And the primary endpoint was transfusion independence for 12 consecutive weeks, starting within the first 24 weeks. And then there were various other anemia endpoints. There are many different ways of cutting the story with regard to anemia in this field and others. And so broadly speaking, there was a 2-to-1 randomization, and just over 200 patients received the luspatercept. Looking at the primary endpoint in this 2-to-1 randomized study, 23.1% of patients achieved that endpoint of transfusion independence for 12 weeks with luspatercept, and 13.3% on the control arm. And the p-value for that was that near miss, 0.06. But there's a story behind that. I mentioned anemia endpoints are really tricky. And if you take a look at and listen to Francesco Passamonte presenting this data, what you'll begin to understand is actually if you looked at a subgroup analysis by region, the Asia Pacific region showed a significant difference. So there were way more placebo responses in Asia Pacific, so 28.9%, versus LUSPA responses, 23.9%. And if specifically, if you look at mainland China, that was even more pronounced, with 40% of patients having placebo response versus 26.7% on luspatercept. So there's something about region and that related to restrictive transfusion practices and also a blood shortage, but very unfortunate. And then finally, there was also a single patient where there was a response adjudication, and that patient was flipped from being a responder to a non-responder, and then the p-value became significant. So there's a big story here around how you recruit patients and how you manage your trial and that nitty-gritty thing about anemia responses. So overall, then the final figures were 23.1% of patients responding to luspatercept, and 12.4% responding to placebo, and then that was statistically significant. But I want to just also talk to some of the another anemia endpoints, if that's okay with you, because whilst transfusion independence for 12 weeks, maybe plus an increase in hemoglobin, is a laudable aim, for our patients, it could be enough just to reduce the need for transfusion by 50%. So you don't need to be in the hospital for so long, and you only have half as much blood. And then, so if you look at those kind of figures, you're seeing kind of 40 to 50% of patients responding to luspatercept, which is kind of gives you a bit more of the backstory. So in conclusion, I would say the data suggests that luspatercept can give a benefit to these patients, but there is still a way to go.
Taking all that info together, what is your main kind of interpretation of this trial? Again, I know you can't just throw out data and this is technically a negative study, but just how do you interpret it in terms of what luspatercept could actually mean for this patient population?
I think that there is still much to do in our management of patients with myelofibrosis. And I think that this study, all of the full story now, which is laid out in front of us, demonstrates that this agent, which is well tolerated, although there might be a few questions about hypertension and some bone fractures that came up in the presentation, that are still very low numbers, could add to the armamentarium for patients. But there are still lots of patients who have unmet need. And, you know, there's interest, of course, in other agents that might improve hemoglobin. And principally, of course, the field's also looking at combinations, selinexor combinations that worsens anemia. Could we add luspatercept in there? Still get that survival benefit, add luspatercept. And then, of course, the CALR therapies, where we do seem to also be seeing very nice anemia responses. So lots to add, but I think luspatercept's a good choice. And that's what this study demonstrates, as well as some important lessons for us in considering how robustly these studies are conducted.
I know it's kind of an evolving time in the MPN space in general in terms of, you know, defining these endpoints, that finding ones that are clinically meaningful for patients. As research goes on, where would you like to see these efforts focused on to continue improving these outcomes, finding these combination therapies and so on?
I think that we should challenge ourselves to be restless and determined in the search for better therapies. It can't be beyond the wit of man to deliver something much better for our patients with MF. We understand more and more and more about the biology. We're at a time where there's so much exciting science and so much ability to develop and test new molecules at speed. And we're seeing that, right? We've only seen data with one CALR therapy, but there are multiple others. Also of note, really interesting in the EHA meeting was Adam Mead's presentation about G6B as a potential novel target, which is mutation agnostic, but possibly MPN specific, and the proposal to link that to an ADC. Could be super exciting. So I think, yes, we should be looking for more, but we shouldn't take our eye off what the patients want. So we need to work with patients. Bear in mind, 50% reduction for 50% of patients in transfusions. That's meaningful. It's not negative. It's a meaningful endpoint, but there's still a lot more we can be doing for these patients. So I would like to see us move a bit more towards personalized medicine, testing at pace. I would really like to see us evolve our endpoints a lot better. That's another thing this study demonstrates too.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive on Air.